A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 370. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are continuing our discussion about Years and Years. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
This is a 2019 serial, a six-part series from Russell T. Davies that was a co-production between the BBC and HBO at 6 one-hour episodes. Episodes it had, and we have a great cast in here and a very interesting group of characters they're playing, showing a speculative look at the next 15 years or so. I think 2019 to a little bit all the way out in 2034. Of British future history and world future history. And we do that through this group of four adult siblings and all of their families and people they interact with.
Absolutely. And it is, our listeners probably used to us here using the word interesting about shows, but this one is so interesting. There's so much to talk about, Brian.
It's a very rich show. There's a lot of depth here.
Let us start off with one of the subjects we wanted to cover in our second part of our discussion, with representation and the characters in Russell T. Davies shows. Something which I would say he's always been very good at, Brian, always reflecting the diversity of society in his shows. Of course, this is something we've become very familiar with through his time as the showrunner on Doctor Who, and reflecting, I think, the Doctor's views, I think, Brian, that Doctor, you know, always been somebody who encouraged and supported the diversity of the human race. And I think that's been reflected in the writing, the casting, some of the groundbreaking choices that they've made in Doctor Who, but also in his other shows as well.
Yes, it is pretty clear that diversity and representation are things that are important to RTD. In the Lyons family, in the extended Lyons family, in Years and Years, we have multicultural and multiracial group. We have people who are disabled. We have queer characters. We have people with a variety of beliefs and perspectives. And of course, we're looking at people from multiple generations as well. So there is clearly some effort that went into that. And I think it's quite effective in how it was done.
And we've mentioned the Lyons siblings as being fascinating and interesting characters. That doesn't mean that they're all, you know, good as gold, that they're all sort of clones of each other. They have very different views. They have different political sort of opinions. And they do have this sort of binding love, which keeps bringing them back together again. But they often clash about, for instance, the rise to power of Vivian Rook and so on. And they also, because of generational stuff, we occasionally get tension between Muriel and some of her sort of family, with some of her slightly old-fashioned views coming out from time to time, particularly when she's very stressed or the situation is very tense. And that's used, I think, to good effect in the story as well.
I think so. And it does some, it shows some complexity in people's views too, because Muriel, who is the grandmother of the siblings, and quite a bit older than anyone else we see in the series, she has some views that at times are racist, and at other times she seems to be quite accepting and progressive on racial issues. And we see her being pretty progressive and accepting to her grandchildren who are gay, and these sorts of things. And we don't know what her road to getting to that point was, but we see that her views are not sort of straightforward and simple and all one thing. It's more complicated than that.
Life is, and this reflects it extremely well.
Yeah, it shows some of the messiness there, I think.
So we also wanted to talk about technology in Years and Years, which develops as the years roll by in the six episodes. One of the things I quite liked about it was it's often just seen as a background feature of everyday life that the characters use, even though it seems to us quite remarkable at times and advanced. And it's nicely done, I thought, Brian.
Yes, it is. And we get some real things being represented with future technology in the way that we have things that seem very natural to the children of the four siblings, who are, you know, children and teenagers, but their parents find those things sort of uncomfortable and maybe things that you don't want to spend too much time with. So we get lots of real human things being shown with future technology. One of the things we see where they do some of this is a digital assistant called Senor, which is very much like the voice assistants that we have on phones now, but it's a more advanced version of that that is a little more conversational and is able to understand and take instructions more. And we clearly see how Muriel was not very comfortable with it at the beginning, where she's much more so later on and ends up sort of relying on it.
And Senor almost becomes like a friend to her at the very last episode, a friend that she misses when the actual physical object is replaced just by a sort of Wi-Fi version.
Yeah, that's right. You have the end of the cycle where in the end Muriel really wants to keep Senor around, where some of the other characters are saying, oh, you don't need to use that anymore. You know, we've moved on to something else.
And of course, the other thing that this allows is communication between the family. So even when they're not meeting up for a family celebration or gathering, we can have these group chat links through the Senor devices, and we can see them all in their different homes or on their phones, but also getting a chance to have another family interaction and to comment on what's going on. Neatly handled in the show, and a useful device to bring these characters back together even when they're separated by distance.
Yes, that's right. And what it shows is a sort of agility that any time almost that someone wants to have a discussion with everyone from the family, people are almost always available for that. And, we very quickly see those coming together. So that's interesting.
Of course, we also see some downsides of technology. We see Rosie losing her job because the new self-heating meals mean they don't need so many staff in the school kitchen. We see increase in use of surveillance technology, spying, as it's referred to by one of the characters at one point in the show. And of course, Vivian Rook, although she doesn't develop the device, she uses or demonstrates a device called the Blink, which wipes out digital communication in a set area. And later on in the series, when things get really dark, we see larger versions of this handheld device being used to block out any form of communication in certain areas that the government perhaps wants to conceal for various reasons.
Yes, we are getting a little bit more spoilery here, as we often do in the second half of our discussions. But we see, as things progress, these camps being set up where people are being held and some quite distressing things happening there. And a key part of that was the ability to suppress communication so that people that are being held in very difficult situations are not able to communicate anything about that to the wider public.
Absolutely fascinating part of the show.
Yes, for sure. Something else that the show gets into that is something of a sideline, but is quite important to it, is the idea of transhumanism. And we get into this with Stephen and Celeste, the married couple, being sort of challenged in their liberal views when they find out that their daughter, Bethany, is interested in becoming something else. She considers herself transhuman, meaning that she wants to move her consciousness ultimately to something in technology, to become one with technology and ultimately part of the cloud.
And what an absolutely fascinating concept, but also how brilliantly handled by RTD and the cast, because Stephen and Celeste, who consider themselves quite liberal, progressive parents, when they find out that Bethany has been searching for information on trans on the internet, they believe that that means she is transsexual. And so they have a very open and supportive conversation with her about this. And then she reveals to them that no, she doesn't mean trans as in changing gender. She means trans as in transhuman, as you say, Brian. And of course, this brings them up rather sharpish, and their liberal views break down quite quickly, don't they?
Yes, it was very much done as a coming out scene, and they handled that very well in the idea that the parents who thought they knew what to expect were all ready to be supportive, and then when they find out what the situation really is and what their child's identity really is, they are not supportive, and they are thrown by what they hear. So that was fascinating how that was done.
And Bethany, of course, will continue her quest to become a transhuman, with her ultimate aim of being uploaded to the cloud. But along the way, she will have various implants that will help her interact with technology. And we see a sort of growing societal shift towards some level of implantation of technology. We also see that, of course, like any new technology, there are people who will exploit it. And so there are moments in the show when we see some bad outcomes and something goes disastrously wrong. But it's fascinating that there is this idea that there is the technology that can be implanted for those who want it.
Yes, absolutely. And they do some interesting things with the technology itself, and also with the idea that there are shady organizations taking advantage of people who want technology that is beyond what they could really afford, and they get into some quite grim things happening there. And they also get into the idea of the British government paying for this advanced implantable technology for people. But the government still owns the technology once it's been implanted. So they sort of hint at something that's a little bit like indentured servitude. It gets into some dark ideas as we progress along this journey that we're seeing into the future.
Yes, we see the adult Bethany working basically for the government in terms of using her technology to data mine and data scrape and so on. But as you say, this idea that she is somehow beholden to the government, that they own her, it's quite spooky and scary in a way, and brilliantly handled.
Yes, and there's also even that idea that the technology that people have implanted is so powerful in terms of what they can do with information and with surveillance that it puts them on a level of capability and even power that is much greater than what anyone else has. So there are complicated ideas that come into things there.
Now, we also have to mention that this show contains, I suppose, the most visible and obvious villain of the piece, although she may not be. But anyway, Vivian Rook, this charismatic, plain-speaking businesswoman who sort of starts her reputation by swearing on a television program, which of course draws censure from the producers, but seems to be approved of by the audience. And as a result, she starts her own political party, which is even called the Four Star Party, a reference to the asterisk that would be used, I guess, to blank out the word that she speaks when it was reprinted in the papers.
Not only that, but the manner in which she swears on broadcast is to say that she doesn't give a F-bomb, and it is talking about something about foreign events somewhere else. So it is setting up this sort of focus on the UK and setting up right from the beginning her anti-immigrant stance and her xenophobic position.
Yes, and this sort of populist politician who has a nationalist viewpoint, a sort of isolationist and British exceptionalism viewpoint, that we're not interested in what's going on in the rest of the world, it's all about what's happening here. And her rise to power that we see as the series progresses, and this, you know, an obvious reflection on other populist anti-immigrant politicians right round the world, Trump, Johnson, here in the UK, the figure of Nigel Farage, but there's also Orban and other people like that, Bolsonaro around the world. There's all sorts of examples. And Vivian Rook is the representation in this show, isn't she, Brian?
Yes, she is. And the character is written and performed in quite a believable way and a very scary way. And we see, you know, some of the worst of these viewpoints and how someone like this attains power and has these quite brutal policies that we learn as we go along just how scary it is. And we get to a point later in the show where we see her with a small group of people explaining how concentration camps may not be such a bad idea. And the idea of putting immigrants in camps becomes something that this British government at that point is willing to do. And this is the sort of story and the sort of cautionary tale that they're telling with Years and Years.
Absolutely. The resistible rise to power of Vivian Rook.
And it's also worth noting that we see real politicians from other countries being named, and we see video clips of them occasionally. So there are references and views of Donald Trump and Mike Pence, and also of Vladimir Putin, but we don't see real politicians from the UK. We see fictional politicians from the UK.
And we also see, I guess, or we hear about various European countries also succumbing to right-wing politics and nationalist and isolationist views.
And in some cases, even democratic institutions failing and people like Putin becoming, you know, president for life and this sort of thing.
And of course, Vivian Rook played with a sort of charming villainy by Emma Thompson, no less.
Yes, absolutely. And you can see the appeal that she has to some people. And some of those people are the characters that we are following and that we've gotten to know and got to like. Some of them are quite taken by Vivian Rook and what she's doing.
Yeah, some members of the Lyons family will start out slightly sort of dismissive of her or thinking she's very amusing but nothing more. Then they'll become enamored of her policies and vote for her, and then later on their views will change. So yes, it does show a fascinating progression of the society's viewpoint of this woman.
Absolutely. There is a fascinating moment at one point when there is a British election and we see our major characters, who we've been following for a number of episodes by then, we see see who each one votes for. We see which party each one votes for. And it's fascinating to see that they've built up enough by this point that it's really interesting to see who votes for whom.
Do you know, that's a terrific scene, Brian, and acted so well by all the cast, all of whom are voting, one gets the feeling, with a slightly guilty conscience. And it's interesting to see who they actually do vote for and why they seem to be slightly guilty about it in each case. Yeah, it's absolutely a wonderful scene, brilliantly done.
So I think we're already segueing into our own opinions and feelings here. There's a lot to say about things in Years and Years. So, Eamon, why don't we start out with what did you like, or what were some of the things that you liked about Years and Years?
So I think the BBC-HBO co-production, Brian, gives us, or gives RTD and the Red production company and the rest of the crew, a decent budget and makes this show look and sound and feel so vital and so important. And it just looks great. It's a very well-produced show where everything in it looks just right. And I think the way they represented technology, apart from that rubbish robot, but the way they represented technology and its sort of just, you know, gentle becoming a part of everyday life was so well done. So in terms of the actual production values, I can't really fault it at all, Brian. What about yourself?
I think you're right on that. I think what they had, and I, you know, related to the budget, was the ability to show scope, to make it be a very large scale program where we see things over many years and in lots of different locations and with lots of location work. It gives us this sense of scale that this is a big show where we are seeing lots of big important things happen and lots of sort of small, very personal things happen over a long span of time. And I think that's directly connected to the look of it and the budget and the production values. So yeah, I think all of that worked very well.
So we often move next to talk, I guess, about either the writing or the cast. Shall we start with RTD himself and writing of the show?
Sure. Why don't you go ahead on that?
Well, I think this is incredibly strong from RTD. You know, all of his shows are great, and he is such an important figure in British television. And I think there's two things about this show and the writing for it. One is the great, as you say, the scope of the ideas presented to us. This is a show full of ideas and full of sort of reflections. It's almost, you know, dare I say it, it's almost the Black Mirror type show, but brought, you know, extended out to a series and telling us where we could be headed. But also, I think the brilliant writing of the characters, each of the characters in the Lyons family are so interesting and engaging. And at times they disappoint us, and at times we don't like them, but they're always interesting. And I think it's, you know, it's a reflection of how well written they are, Brian. I think that works tremendously well.
I would agree with that. I think this is some of Russell T. Davies' very best writing. It's very well written. It manages to do the big things and the small things at the same time. So we have the characters and the personal things being handled very well and in a way that makes us really interested in these people. At the same time as we have these big society level things happening that are very compelling as well. And I think when we compare to Black Mirror, I think it balances that better and gets the characters better realized than that. And of course, this is several episodes long, so you have the opportunity for that. But yes, I think the writing is really quite something.
And then, of course, the cast and their performances, and it is a big cast. There's a lot of characters. You know, it's an extended family. It's an extended cast of characters. What did you think of all the performances in this show, Brian?
I thought the performances were great. I don't think there was anyone who was disappointing. I thought they brought a lot of personality to this. across the board, they were really good. I think Anne Reed as Muriel, the grandmother, was very good and had sort of a lot of aspects to show. And her interactions with Tania Miller's character, Celeste, and Tania Miller's performance as well, there was sort of real sort of, you know, masterclass level stuff going on with those two characters and their interactions alone, to say nothing of Emma Thompson being spectacular in this, and very strong performances from people like Russell Tovey and Rory Kinnear having to do sort of simpler, not as flamboyant type of character, does very well and gives us a lot of depth and a lot of emotion, as do a lot of characters in this. So yeah, the performances in here were really something special.
Absolutely. There's not a duff note in the performances. Everybody in this show is great. You're quite right. The relationship and the acting between Anne Reed's character and Tania Miller, and the mother-in-law, daughter-in-law tension, and they live apart, and then circumstances force them together into the same house, and then even further together as the show progresses. And the way that was written and the way the two actresses portrayed it was just brilliant. But I'll also mention that in the background, we've got lots of other characters. We've got other kids. We've got the great-grandkids, who do, as the show progresses, I think it's the only ones where we see recasting because of the years, the time passage. So we do get to see them as children and then recast as teenagers or adult actors. And I know you wanted to mention there's almost like a background character of one of the grandchildren or the great-grandchildren, Lincoln Lyons, who's fascinating just to be seen almost in the background of this show.
Yeah, Lincoln Lyons doesn't have a great deal of screen time in this, and he is not a major character, but we see questions about gender presentation and possibly gender identity. There is a plot reason where, very young as a child, Lincoln Lyons is dressing as a girl and decides he likes, the ribbons in his hair and this sort of thing. And we see Lincoln, sort of experimenting with feminine clothing and this sort of thing. And we don't see much of Lincoln. And by the end of the series, we see Lincoln looking very feminine indeed. And we don't know if Lincoln was actually transgender and possibly changed name and pronouns, or if Lincoln just liked dressing and presenting in that way. And it was just something that was, as you say, in the background, there along the way. And there are lots of little things like that in here. And that was something that adds richness to this show.
And how wonderful that it just happens in the show. It's almost entirely not commented on by other characters. The family just accept it. It's just Lincoln and, they love Lincoln. And everything just carries on. How wonderful and refreshing to see that.
Yes. And we also have one of the four siblings, Daniel, is gay. And that is sort of known and accepted and something that is clearly very important to his character. We see him getting married and his relationships are important to this show and help bring us into some of the larger political issues. And that's fine. It's done very well. It turns out one of the other siblings is also queer, but we don't see that until much later, and it's sort of not remarked upon until all of a sudden it's there and you see someone else in a same-sex relationship. So I like that there was that little contrast that wasn't commented on as the one that was very much recognized by everyone very early on, and someone else where it wasn't really noticed until something came up much later.
It's all great stuff. But of course, we have to talk about stuff that's less than great, perhaps. Was there anything about this show that you didn't like so much, Brian?
There was very little. This was really a tremendous show. I will mention that there were a couple of things that it felt like were not quite covered in as much detail as I would have liked. This was 6 episodes, and they are absolutely packed with stuff. There's a tremendous amount happening in here, and I actually could have enjoyed this being stretched out over another episode or two. There was a reference quite late in the story to the group of implanted transhuman characters, Bethany and others like her, in this situation that we mentioned that was sort of bordering on indentured servitude, where the government owned their technology. There was a reference to the group of them breaking away and somehow declaring independence in some manner, and it's never explained. And I would have loved to have heard more about that. That was the big thing, but maybe one or two other sort of things that we just get glimpses of that we could have explored a little bit more. So that's the only thing that I would have liked to have seen a little bit different with this, possibly.
Yes, the digital humans and the group of them, would have been nice to have more about those and have Bethany's sort of colleagues and friends perhaps fleshed out a bit more. And how unusual for me to say this, Brian, I think you're quite right. I could have actually done with this series being slightly longer. And I very rarely say that about a British Invaders show.
There is a lot of content in these 6 episodes. And I think each episode is just about a full hour. You know, there's a lot of time spent in this, but there's just so much content. And because it's looking at things at this very personal level and these personal interactions and the various trials and difficulties and things that people go through, it becomes very rich in that way, and also very rich in the big societal things that we're seeing happen. And we have this, as I've mentioned, the cautionary tale, where we are seeing all of this about this populist politics and just how disturbing things can become when we go down that route and what needs to happen to pull back from it.
And while we're talking about that, I will just mention what you were saying off air, Brian, which is Vivian Rook is portrayed as the sort of visible villain for us. There's a suggestion within the show that she may not be all that she seems, and that she may be almost a puppet figure being run by other shadowy figures who we don't see. But there's also the suggestion that I can't really give away without spoilers, but the idea that there's a larger villain, which was fascinating as well. So, you know, there's quite a lot going on, several layers in this show, I think.
For sure. And you definitely have the idea that maybe the villain is all of us. You know, we put her there to begin with. And, you know, there's the complacency allowing things to happen. So there's a lot of, it's everyone's fault. It's not just this person at the focus. And we also get the idea, as there is sort of a moving on from Vivian Rook that is sort of involved or hinted at in the later part of this show. But we get the idea that there will always be someone else, and it's up to us to not fall into this situation that we could fall into with these right-wing, anti-immigrant, populist politics and these types of figures.
Absolutely. I will mention that it's quite a dark show. It's quite bleak about our future and about, you know, what we have to do in order to avoid years and years happening to us. I'll say that some of the characters have their own very dark times in this show. We see some mental health moments. We see at least one character contemplating and almost going to the point of suicide. So just a content note that they are in there as well.
And not everyone makes it out. Not everyone makes it to the end of this.
No.
There are people who we are following very closely who die partway through.
Yes.
And, you know, there are things that are unexpected and difficult. So yeah, this is not always an easy show, but it's a very rich and detailed show, and it's quite superb in many ways.
And I just would have liked, I know I put in our outline that possibly the ending wasn't earned. I would have liked a little bit more time for the ending. I thought perhaps, thinking about it as we've been talking about, Brian, I think perhaps it did. They were running out of time in these 6 1-hour slots to get to the ending, perhaps.
Yes, I do like what they did with the ending. I liked that part of the journey, and I think it makes it more interesting as a cautionary tale or a story about what could happen. But yes, if a couple of points of the resolution could have sort of been stretched out and had a bit more time devoted, that could have been interesting. I think in many ways the final episode could have been 2 episodes and made it a more interesting show. That said, I'm really picking nits at that point, because this is something that I really enjoyed and appreciated a lot.
So are we nearly ready to make our recommendations on this show, Brian?
I think we should go to the recommendations.
And whose turn is it to start? Do you want to kick us off?
I can start. So, Years and Years was a wonderful show. It's very well written with lots of great performances. The political cautionary tale and showing us what can go wrong with these right-wing anti-immigrant xenophobic types of figures and policies, it's done very, very well. Where some people have a series that they watch every year at Christmas, I am considering making this a series that I'll watch every year at New Year's, because it's something that really has a lot to it that is worth coming back to. So absolutely, it's a strong recommendation from me.
Yes, no surprises. It's a double thumbs up from us here on British Invaders. I loved Years and Years both times. It's 6 hours of great television from Russell T. Davis. And if you haven't had a chance to watch it yet, we strongly recommend you do. And you can stream it in most parts of the world, it seems, particularly here if you've got BBC iPlayer. So have a look at it. It's great.
Very good. I'd love to hear what people have to say about it on our Facebook group.
Do please get in touch.
So, in summary, Years and Years introduces us to the Lyons family, the 4 adult siblings with a grandmother, and many of them have children and spouses and a variety of other people, this extended group and the various people they interact with, starting in 2019, which is when the show was released, and stretching out about 15 years into the future. And it shows us what happens when a right-wing, anti-immigrant, isolationist politician, populist politician in the form of Vivian Rook comes on the scene and ultimately rises to power and results in some very disturbing things happening. We see what happens in a societal way and a world way on a very large scale, while we also see how things develop with the personal lives of this family we're following, and we also see the development of technology over a number of years.
Do get in touch and tell us what you thought about Years and Years.
Absolutely.
And please come back and join us next time. We are looking at a fascinating, to me at least, adaptation of an Isaac Asimov robot story. It's the only surviving episode of a show called Out of This World, and it's the episode called Little Lost Robot from 1962. We're going years and years back in time for this one, Brian.
Yes, absolutely. And Out of This World was an anthology show, so Little Lost Robot was meant to stand alone as an episode in a way. So that will be really interesting to look at that for sure.
Can't wait to have a look at that and talk about it next time.
Until then, you can find us at BritishInvaders.com, where we have all 300 plus episodes that we've done there. Or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find us there. And we have lots of good discussions going on our group there. Hopefully we'll be well into talking about Years and Years.
Absolutely. Do come and join us there, or find us at the Voice of Geeks Network, where you'll find all sorts of shows, live streaming of games and Twitch streams and so on. You can find that on the Voice of Geeks Network at vognetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you so much for staying with us for these years and years. Until next time, it's Eamon in England also signing off.